Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Sip a tea and then we roll.
Okay.
All right, let's do it.
Featuring Jerry Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldani. This is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. Actually, I should say welcome to part two of our last episode. This is, of course, a continuation of our story about the Baker Street heist.
Yeah.
Vincent, do you want to catch everybody up for the people who haven't heard the episode for like a day or two and have forgotten everything?
Sure. So yeah. The episode, if you haven't heard episode one, I definitely go back and check that one out, because I don't think you're going to be able to follow. These theories aren't going to make a lot of sense if you haven't heard the first episode.
Yeah.
But what it amounts to is that a radio operator picks up a walkie-talkie transmission from some people who are robbing a very high-end bank in London. And with some cajoling, he gets the cops to go and investigate, but they don't catch the guys. They manage to get away. An investigation turns up that there was a man named Tony Gavin and his crew who were responsible for it. Despite a bunch of the crew getting arrested, not all of them gets busted. And a lot of the loot is never recovered. And rumors begin to circulate that there is involvement from the UK government, and that these burglars, these bank robbers, may have went in there to do something on behalf of the UK government
and help themselves to a little cash and some trinkets.
Oh yeah, right.
Know, while doing it, of course, that's their incentive. Why not? Yeah,
exactly. This leads to something called a D notice being issued, and I'll talk a little more about that as we go. But it basically stopped the press from covering the story for a while in the interest of national security, which in a lot of people's mind confirmed that these guys were not ordinary burglars. They were there to do business of the UK government. What that is not known. And so we're going to get into all of the different theories about what really went down with this bank heist. And again, that's just a very cursory summary.
Oh yeah.
So please go back and listen to part one.
Yeah. So a fun little heist. So what theories do we have here? There's several theories.
Well, hold on, Joe. Before we get into that, I do have two other small orders of business.
Oh, okay.
The first one is a correction.
Oh, okay.
I dramatically misspoke last week. I said the UK doesn't have a Freedom of Information Act like the US does. They do. It's called the Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah.
It really exists. It's out there. What I meant to say was that our Freedom of Information Act is in some ways different from the UK one. Mm-hmm. And that I think that if this had happened in the United States, we'd know a few more details than we know it happening in the UK.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Sometimes the compliance that we get to FOIA requests here in the US, there's a lot of passive aggressive behavior there.
Oh, and, yeah.
And they find ways around them. And one of my favorite things is when somebody goes to the hell of wrenching some documents from some government agency, especially like the FBI or somebody. Mm-hmm. And after much wrangling and expense and time, they finally get the documents, and like they're half of them have been redacted. You know,
oh, and they'll charge you like $5,000 a page for it.
Oh, yeah, they charge you outrageous sums of money. And then they blank out all the good stuff.
We got an email from Philip in the UK. He's a listener. He's contacted us several times, and he set me straight on this.
Oh, thanks, Philip.
Yeah, thank you, Philip. I love it when listeners correct us. Yeah, so I went through and looked at it, and it does seem like it's a little more strictly worded around national security than even our FOIA is. It gives the government maybe just a little wider berth. Yeah. And I'm no legal expert, but I have noticed that in some cases we've covered that the UK government seems to have a little more power to not release documents. The other thing, which is kind of exciting, is I found a graphic in a newspaper while I was kind of brushing up on this story.
Mm-hmm.
And it solved a kind of a big question that we were confused about last week, which was, did they go underneath the Chicken Inn basement? Does the Chicken Inn, the restaurant? So there's three buildings, right?
Yeah.
There's
the bank, the Chicken Inn, and then the building our
the leather store, the former leather goods store.
Yeah,
Le Sac.
Yeah.
So what I couldn't figure out is if the Chicken Inn had a basement, because it seemed like they went underneath the Chicken Inn. But then I noticed that in the pictures, the crime scene photos, the hole, the tunnel that they dug went through the wall.
Yeah. So it looks like they took a shortcut through the Chicken Inn basement.
Right. Which it doesn't seem that they did. Recounts say that they used the foundation of the Chicken Inn as a support. So how did they go through the wall and then go underneath the Chicken Inn basement? I don't know if you can picture that in your mind. It's kind of awkward. Yeah. Well, the graphic I saw that was in, I want to say, the Independent showed that the Chicken Inn does have a basement, but it's more shallow than the basement of Le Sac.
Mm.
If that graphic is actually correct, it ties everything together and then kind of clears that question up. They were able to go through their wall and underneath the Chicken Inn.
It does, but this sort of undermines slightly our first theory.
It does, and let's get to that. Joe, would you take the first theory? Because
I'll talk about our first theory, which is that these guys really were just a bunch of garden variety criminals, kind of dumbasses, and which is why they got caught. There are aspects of this heist that are extremely clever. And other really things clever. That are gobsmackingly stupid, you know. we talked about that a little bit. There's an argument there, I think, that these guys were really just criminals. There was no MI5 involvement or government involvement in any way. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they had they seemed to have very good intel, and that's one of the things that I don't know. Apparently, they somehow did some research and were able to figure out for example, the disparity in the depths between the two basements in these buildings. Mm-hmm. You know, which requires some access to public records or something. I don't know exactly how they figured that out.
But who knows?
Yeah.
They had a man on the inside of the Lloyd's Bank.
Yeah, they did have But what's and this gets back to, we'll talk a little bit more about this, but, you know, exactly how much did their guy on the inside at the bank know? You know, I mean, there's probably a lot of stuff that they don't tell everybody at the bank. But again, this is more for theory number two.
Right.
Let's get back to our stupid ass criminals thing here.
Well, remember, Benjamin Wolfe rented the Le Sac building where they began their tunnel.
Under his own name.
Under his own name.
I know.
Look, we've covered some idiot criminals on this show. I don't know that I've heard anything that dumb. What did he think was going to happen?
Yeah.
When the police followed that tunnel back.
Yeah. And this one lends some support to both theory one and theory two in a sense. So, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
So theory one would be that these guys are idiots.
Yeah, these guys are idiots and just criminals. So anyway, but the skeptics do like this theory because there are skeptics. I mean, one of the more popular theory is that the government was involved with this. But of course, there are going to be skeptics too. Now, it's possible and maybe even probable, but as I just said, it doesn't come close to explaining everything. They were very smooth in many ways. They really made almost no attempt to get away with the crime. They left the tunnel intact, although, really trying to cover up the tunnel, was really kind of a losing proposition. I think
they were never going to be able to do that.
No, there's no way to do that. They could retrieve all the dirt they dug out of it and put it back, but that's not going to really cover their tracks.
Yeah, they were going to be able to cover the hole that they made in the bank vault.
Yeah, no, they can't. Right. Yeah. And so,
but see, that's the thing, is that was never not the plan, right? So that means that from the day that guy put his name on the lease, he was going to be in the crosshairs.
Yeah. And so that's a bit of a head scratcher, you got to admit, yeah. Right?
It's such a bad move, mm-hmm. You know, renting the building in his own name, having the tunnel lead straight back to where they were. I don't think any of these guys had like alibis set up for the time the heist took place. It's so dumb that it leads people to wonder if they maybe thought they would be covered. So keep that in mind as we proceed.
Let's see. Besides that, they were actually observed by police fencing some of the loot. To some really kind of petty criminals, and like in daylight, it wasn't smoothly done at all. And what are they doing getting involved with really street level crooks?
Exactly. If they're so organized and so sophisticated, why were they working with the gang G's?
Yeah, I don't know. Of course, I guess you could argue too that not every one of these criminals. I mean, there was a whole group of them. There were at least a half a dozen of them, I think, and maybe more. And they may have been of varying levels of intelligence. So, maybe Tony Gavin just couldn't hold his little crew together and stop them from going off and doing stupid things. Maybe, for example, when the place got rented, he just assumed that this guy was going to take measures to cover up his own personal involvement with renting the place and just trusted the guy to do the intelligent thing. Yeah, I don't know. That was not a right move on Tony's part if he didn't want to get caught. So, yeah, I don't know. It's like, we got these super, super criminals committing this very sophisticated crime, but they're kind of stupid. I mean, they did their intelligence gathering. They sent a guy in to measure floor tiles and use his umbrella to measure the width and breadth of the vaults and everything. And yet, in the end, they were caught through their own stupidity. They get sloppy or another argument could be that if they were doing this at the behest of, say, some government agency, say the police or MI5, maybe they just had assurances that everything was golden and they didn't need to worry about getting tracked down and busted because they were going to smooth everything over for them. And maybe they took that a little too far. And so MI5 was just saying, hey, don't stress. We're gonna help you out here. And they took it to say that you can just be as stupid as you want to be, and we'll make sure that nothing happens to you. Which is probably
let's put a pin in that one, Joe, because we're gonna revisit that one in a big way.
Yeah. Oh yeah. For sure.
Well, you know the thing that this theory reminds me the most of, Joe, is George Eisler.
I think about George Elser, the German.
Elser,
the German who tried to bomb Hitler out of existence. Yeah. Yeah,
he was so meticulous in his planning, but his getaway scheme was like, hope no one sees me crossing into Switzerland.
Well, in that case, and if you haven't heard that episode, you should listen to that fascinating historic episode. But his his big failure is he didn't take into account that the Germans were going to step up borders on the patrols on the border. Because they had invaded Poland, they were now on a war footing. And so naturally, of course, they did. And this guy didn't. That's where he really fell down, was in his intel. If he had known that, he probably could have gotten away with it. He just would have been a little more careful. And
it does kind of seem to me that these guys kind of are a little bit like George Elser, in that if theory one is true, that they just got so focused on getting whatever was in there that they wanted money, loot, mm-hmm. blackmail info for the royal family, whatever. Mm-hmm. That they didn't even think about covering their tracks.
It's totally possible, too, that the government was involved, and yet these guys were at the same time stupid criminals, so they could both be true. I mean, that's the problem with criminals, is a lot of them do tend to be kind of dumb. I'm sure many of our audience are probably criminals, so sorry, I don't mean to offend you. I'm sure you're not dumb, just most of your fellow criminals are dumb. I'm sure a lot of people tune in to our podcast to get handy tips on how to get away with crime.
I hope not. Don't do crime.
You should not do crime.
Well, so let's talk about theory number two.
Well, we got another one here. Yeah. What's our next theory?
Well, this one is, honestly, it's kind of a short one, and we should probably brush over it pretty quickly, but it is an interesting one. So it's that the cops were in on it.
Yeah.
And so it's 1976, and this guy, James Humphrey, he's a pornographer and a strip club owner. Mm. He alleged that the cops were well aware of the heist, and they took something on the order of £1 million to keep quiet while everything went down. Mm-hmm. Now, Humphreys is not necessarily a reliable source. I believe he was in trouble with the law at this time.
Mm-hmm. Who did he tell this to? Did he tell this to the police, or did he tell it to the press?
He told it to the cops.
told it to the cops.
He told it to the cops. I don't know how it ended up in the press. I don't know if it leaked from the cops or whether he also told the press, but he definitely told the police this.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, he's not necessarily a super reliable source, but he was convincing enough that Scotland Yard that following year, opened an inquiry into these allegations. Mm. Nothing seems to have come from it, but I do think it's worth noting that his story lines up with a detail that was not as widely published in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
which is that when Rawlins called the cops, they basically ignored him.
Yeah, they said,
you know, the local cops. He had to get in touch with Scotland Yard to get anything done about this. If you work on the theory that these guys are just kind of dumb criminals, that maybe they did have the police paid off or had promised them some of the dividends from the heist.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Yeah.
That could have something to do with it.
Yeah.
A lot of the loot wasn't recovered.
Problem I have with Humphreys is saying is he tells the police this. So he has a vague notion that the police were involved, right? But it doesn't know. How does he know that the cop that he's sitting in a room with telling this to isn't one of the ones that's involved?
I have no idea. Yeah, I probably should have looked into this a little better. I wonder if it might have been... I don't know what cop he told. He might have told Scotland Yard as opposed to the local police.
Mm-hmm.
There's also London is a little bit unique in that it has two distinct police departments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As the London police and the Metropolitan police. So he may have been telling the other branch. I should have looked into this more, but
good question. Yeah. Actually, policing in London is rather the history of the whole thing and how it came about and how it evolved into what it is today is kind of interesting.
It
took place over a long period of time. But we're not going to get into that.
No, so, it's not really worth going into because nothing came of this, right? That's part of why I didn't do too much investigation into who he told and what the specific, all the details. I didn't really go after that because it was a dead end. Mm-hmm. It's just that this guy made these kind of high profile allegations and they kind of make sense, right? Yeah. Like
again, this sort of fits with what I was saying earlier, though. It could be that this led to the sloppiness on the part of our crooks if the cops were involved because they thought they were covered no matter how dumb they were. And that was probably pushing the envelope just a little too far. The cops could cover up all kinds of stuff. You know, they could neglect to look at this or that clue or follow up that this or that lead. But, you know, when you put your own name on the lease of the building, they can't exactly overlook that. No matter how corrupt and in the bag they are for you, they just can't. They can't ignore that. Yeah.
And to any degree which they may have been able to aid these guys in a cover-up, Rawlins kind of shot them in the foot by bringing in Scotland Yard on the night of. I think that really limited their ability. If there was a need for them to help out, to be on the take, to do any actions that would slow down the investigation, they kind of lost whatever lead time they had.
Yeah.
When Scotland Yard suddenly now has a record of it, Robert Rawlins has tapes of it.
Yeah.
Now it's out the window, whatever, if they were on the take, whatever they were paying for, they could no longer cover.
Especially, the Dan Rawlins and his tape. Damn him. Now you got people's Rawlins. Voices on record now.
All right. So why don't you take theory number three? This is the big one.
This is the big one. This is a popular one. It's just La Prince, when you switch to Spanish, it screws me up. It's La Princesa Escandalosa.
There you go.
Yes, as the Princess Scandal, which is our, of course, theory is that there were some photos hidden in these safe deposit boxes, some compromising photos of Princess Margaret and an actor and also a criminal named John Binden. And some claim she was involved with a different gangster or maybe with both gangsters. Princess Margaret was, she was a little bit scandalous. It's thought that perhaps MI5, and let's remember our friend Tony Gavin, our ringleader here, was not just a thief and a photographer. He also had spent a lot of time in the UK's army and was in a sort of special forces kind of stuff, did a lot of training, not just training of himself, but training of other people. And he might have
trained. He was a hand-to-hand combat instructor. People have alleged that he may have... Actually, while he himself did not appear to be MI5, he may have trained a number of MI5 recruits in hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, exactly. And so he knew people in MI5, and sure, MI5 would look at him as a valuable resource in certain situations. Because MI5, I don't know if you know much about it, they did a lot of B&E, and I'm sure they still are doing a lot of B&E in the UK. They did that stuff all the time without warrants. Somebody, they got an allegation, it was credible, this guy might be a Soviet agent, let's go check it out, we'll just go break into his house and search the place top to bottom while he's away at work. That they did a lot of that stuff. And so if you're going to do that kind of thing, it's handy to know some criminal types who can help you out with some of this stuff. I mean, they were all actually, you know, a lot of people in MI5 were very adept at breaking and entering themselves. But for certain jobs, you might want to recruit somebody outside the office. So perhaps they recruited Tony to retrieve these compromising photos of the princess. And then, of course, don't forget Michael X, the revolutionary from Trinidad, the radical. Yeah, he also, it turns out, he had a deposit box there. Coincidence or not? I don't know.
Right. Well, even prior to this, there was a rumor that Michael X had come into possession of these photos.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the specific photos, but of photos of Princess Margaret doing something that would embarrass the royal family. And so I guess this theory would go that he had them in a safe deposit box and was using them as blackmail, either to embarrass the royal family or to get funds for his activities.
Yeah. So, yeah, and under this theory, of course, the robbery was a cover just for the retrieval of these things. But once again, our ham radio operator friend Rollins stuck his nose in it. Well, you know, that changed the equation just a little bit, and some people had to be thrown under the bus, including perhaps Rollins himself. He was, we've mentioned, was threatened with prosecution himself.
So crazy.
Yeah, I know. So that's why Tony Gavin and his friends had to, kind of get sold down the river. There's other accomplices and some other people, like, for example, the woman that was heard on the walkie-talkies, she was never identified or arrested.
Never.
And there were a few other accomplices who were also not ID'd or arrested. Maybe they were people who were involved more deeply with MI5 or were MI5. I don't know.
Well, and what's interesting is that the people who were caught didn't ever give up the other people who were involved, because we don't even have suspect names that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So these people kept their mouths shut, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, of course, on the other hand, a lot of criminals do that. It's like, you know, you don't want to get a reputation as a snitch. So.
No, I guess that's true.
Could have been it. If they knew they were headed off to prison and they knew these people had friends in prison, then snitching out those people would have been a bad idea, you know? So it's always possible if they just didn't snitch, not because of MI5, but just because, you know, that's
true. Yeah. That is very true.
But, you know, but there was a movie about this, matter of fact.
Yes, there was.
Yeah. And here, our movie expert, tell us about this movie.
Well, the movie was called The Bank Job, starring Jason Statham.
Yeah.
I've heard pretty mixed opinions on it. I'm a little lukewarm on the film. I think you liked it quite a bit, though, didn't you?
I thought it was pretty good, but
I might have to revisit it. I haven't watched it in a few years.
I think it's just nice to see Jason Statham in a movie where he's not doing a lot of ludicrous martial arts moves and other stuff. You know, this is a pretty much straight up acting job. He's not a total action star in this at all.
That's true.
It's more of a drama, really, than an action movie. And it's nice. I mean, Jason Statham doesn't get a lot of respect. Man, he doesn't deserve a lot because he makes a lot of crappy movies. But
I think he's a good actor, though.
No, he is a good actor. And actually, I will always, you know, I'll always be in his corner because of Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
I love that. And also Snatch.
Snatch is so good.
Yeah, Snatch is great, too. And so, you know. I'll always kind of like Jason for that, you know.
Totally.
You know, I'll forgive him I will get forgiven for the Expendables 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Yeah, but anyway, back to our story here. Now, but the movie did actually sort of resuscitate and actually elevate this theory, the theory that it was the princess and MI5 sort of, you know, fed intel to our robbers and got them to do the dirty work and get their, you know, and take all the risks of the break in into the vault there. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is a credible theory. I mean, it does make kind of sense.
I think especially, and I should note, there's one thing I maybe wanted to add in our introduction, but I'll get into that now.
Yeah.
One thing that I think is it also has fueled this and could also work to verify it is this D notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the D notice, just to revisit it, is a government order that existed at the time.
A desist notice, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That basically forces the press to no longer cover a certain news event if it is a threat to national security.
Yeah.
The rumor is the strongly held rumor is that at the height of sort of the mania over the whodunit around this, a D notice came down and they stopped covering this in the press. That does seem to be true, but there is one Baker Street heist expert who says that there never was a D notice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, his name's Campbell, but everywhere else you read that the D notice was issued and was real and existed. So I can't really make heads or tail of that. I don't know who to believe on this. I guess but the wisdom is that the D notice was there. If there was actually a real D notice or an unofficial D notice, I guess would be the other way around.
Yeah.
Because it does seem that coverage did just sort of stop.
Yeah.
Very abruptly for a few years.
I can see the whole unofficial D notice. That's where the word just gets out, that we would prefer that you not talk about this. But but again, that kind of thing is, that kind of thing, once again, fuels speculation. It's probably better not to do that, make that kind of a move. If you want this thing to die down, that's just
it's a very blunt instrument. you can see a lot of blowback or whatever with that. But if that really happened, that's kind of, in a way, it's not a smoking gun, but it gets you part the way there, that there was some kind of government involvement. And then you also get things that we were talking about Wolf.
Yeah. Right? Once again, the guy who rented the former leather store in his own name. So that could cut two ways. I think this proves they were dumb, but I like the idea that they basically, the MI5 guys, told Tony Gavin we're going to cover for you guys. We're going to make sure you get away with this. And then he passed that along to his guys. He said, "Look, guys, we got the word from on high, man. We can't get caught for this. I mean, they're going to just take care of us no matter what." And then, unfortunately, Wolf just took that a little bit too literally. And so, again, possible.
It is possible. You have to wonder if it wasn't for Rollins, if there might have been a way that they intended to cover that up.
I think Rollins or not, the hole in the floor of the bank vault would have been discovered. And they would have traced that tunnel back to the building two doors down. They would have found Wolf, Rollins or not. And then there's, of course, Michael Eck, who's got, maybe that's just a coincidence that he had a safe deposit box in the same very bank that they tunneled into. He was apparently hanged in Trinidad in 1975 after he spent several years in prison for unrelated charges. Never really talked about what was in a safe deposit box at that bank.
Yeah, I think that's awfully strange, right? I mean, why would a Trinidadian civil rights activist with very blunt tactics that some have called terrorism have a safe deposit box in one of the fanciest banks in London?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if you're a terrorist, criminal, whatever, you still, in many respects are leading an ordinary life. You still have stuff that you don't want stolen, or stuff that you want to keep secret. So, maybe there was something, maybe he was sitting on some photos of the princess, or, maybe he just, had some family heirlooms that he wanted to keep safe.
Yeah, family heirlooms. People have suggested that he was using that bank to move cash from supporters and allies and stuff out of the UK.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going too much on my gut instinct here, which I try to avoid, but I still think that he would maybe choose, and maybe it's brilliant, maybe it's a little bit of reverse psychology, but I just don't think that he would choose that bank if that's what he were doing. That's a pretty high profile bank.
That's a good point.
You'd be in there with a lot of very high profile people.
Yeah.
Maybe it's so crazy it makes sense.
Maybe I don't know. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying there. That to stick with this theory for another moment, too, there's some other things about it. For example, the intel that the thieves had. I mean, they were able to gather some intel about the buildings, probably from public records or just reconnaissance. Maybe they found out about the disparity in the depths of the chicken place and the leather store and the basements there. Maybe they found out about that by just gaining entree to the buildings, both of them, and just taking a gander in the basement and realizing that, hey, this basement doesn't go as deep as our basement next door. Ah, we can tunnel straight under. Or maybe they had access to public records, or maybe, that intel was supplied to them by, again, MI5 or the police or somebody. The other thing that's interesting is that, you can do all the tunneling you want, but when you come up through the floor of the vault, it was 3 feet of concrete. And luckily for them, it was not reinforced. There was no rebar in that concrete. How did they know that?
One of the things that I was really interested to figure out is everything you read will say they had a contact on the inside of the bank that told them that local road construction had the floor vibration sensor shut off because it was going off all the time.
Yeah.
Who was that contact at Lloyd's?
Yeah.
That person, I can tell you, was never arrested.
Yeah, no, I know. And
I guess I can tell you that they were never tried.
Yeah, and maybe the contact at the bank, maybe there was no direct contact. Maybe, again, their contact was through MI5. Maybe, and who knows, MI5 might have actually engineered all the vibration and road construction to make sure that that sensor was shut off. They would have
See,
been
that's another thing I've wondered about,
yeah.
Right? Because this gets pretty deep into like some conspiracy thinking.
But yeah.
A lot of so many things had to go right for them to just even be there at the base of the plant.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the leather store had to become vacant. That guy had to like leave.
Right. So they needed a storefront to open up that they could rent, that they could tunnel under. They needed road construction to be happening.
Yeah.
Those are two kind of weird coincidences that
yeah.
if you take one away, if LeSac had stayed in business, there'd be nowhere to tunnel from. If the road construction wasn't going on, they would have been found out the moment they started trying to lance their way in or put out explosives.
Yeah, absolutely. And so
and yet they had both those things going for them.
Yeah, it was a remarkable set of coincidences that made this thing happen for them. Yeah, so you gotta kind of wonder that maybe there was some MI5 involvement here. But again, it'll not be proven. The thing about it is, too, is like you can often say that with certain intelligence services that eventually, sooner or later, might be 50 years or so, they will declassify all this stuff and we'll see it.
Just before we move on to our final theory and a little tee off for next week's episode, I did want to point out that this is a theory that is really got legs on it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a little agnostic. I don't know why those guys broke into the bank, but as crazy and wild as this sounds, the more that comes out, which not a ton has come out since 1971, the more stuff that comes out about it, the more this looks realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's actually what attracted me to the case. It is a cool bank heist, but honestly, they got caught. They made some major mistakes. It's not that amazing a story until you realize this aspect. We know that people had tried to blackmail the royal family over Princess Margaret before. Yeah. We know that it had happened. That stuff had got linked to the press. We know that Princess Margaret did some of this stuff. We know that Princess Margaret did some of this stuff in the Caribbean, right in Michael X's backyard. And that we don't know it for a fact, but there are strong rumors that he was interested in blackmailing the royal family.
Mm-hmm.
And that, what better way? What other thing would he have had, really, that he could have blackmailed them over other than, I guess it could have been other things, but that's a pretty likely candidate, right?
Well, yeah. Oh, no, it is. But I would say it's time to burrow down to the next level, which is that the princess's incriminating photos might have actually been a cover story. When you think about it, just plain straight up robbery is the cover story to cover the real reason, which was the photos of the princess, which perhaps was actually a cover story for the real reason they wanted into those safe deposit boxes. It was that perhaps there was a suspected Soviet spy who kept his camera and his code books and all that stuff in the safe deposit box. And so, and cover stories tend to be like that. You don't have one cover story. You have layers of them. So when one is exposed, and peeled back, and it's like, oh, I see. Right, and then people will usually stop. And people have always stopped at the princess cover story. But, and it might be the real deal. It might be actually the story, but it could have been something else. If you have a belief that somebody like John Doe, who has a safe deposit box here, is a Soviet mole, and you got this information from a mole that you have on their side, you don't want to blow that source by going straight in there and looking at a safe deposit box. You want to do it in a sneaky way that doesn't blow the fact that you've heard this information from your source. You got to cover that up. So that could be it too. It could very well be that the princess thing is just a story and just a cover and for the real deal.
This last one is almost more of a tee off to next week's episode.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
But we call this next theory the pervy conservative.
Mm.
So one rumor, and we will tell you that this rumor is coming ever closer to being confirmed, is that photographs of a conservative cabinet minister, so it's a member of the Conservative Party, abusing. So what he was doing is he was sexually abusing children in these photos. They were discovered by the gang and left behind for the police to find beneath the Sherlock-themed graffito. Remember, they left a note that said, how will Sherlock solve this one, I think.
Yeah, and they left the photos there. But yeah, the cops, of course, did sweep it under the rug.
Which is interesting that they'd make the graffiti public. But it is true that there was no investigation or prosecution ever undertaken. And I don't really see any evidence for this other than that there were other sex scandals that really rocked the Conservative Party in the 70s. Yeah,
those stories themselves might have just fueled somebody to just basically make something up and speculate about this possibility, but that's kind of it.
That's kind of it. Who knows? Maybe they just came across those by accident while they were doing it. Anyway, who knows?
I don't buy this theory for this reason, is that they were on the hunt for money and gold and jewelry and stuff like that. I don't think they actually like went through every little sheaf of papers and opened every little envelope to see what was inside there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that wasn't, maybe they did. I don't know. Maybe. It would seem to me like, you know, I would be like all about getting the most valuable stuff I could and getting the hell out of there as quick as I could. And I would be looking through everybody's secret documents personally. Unless, of course, they were on a mission from, you know, if MI5 truly did send them down there, then maybe they told them, go through all these boxes. Here are the numbers we wanted to look at. And just if you find anything incriminating, bring it back to us. We can always use some good blackmail material. So maybe they did.
Yeah. So there's not a lot of meat on this theory.
No,
but not at all. I will say that this will come up again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, you know, it's just a general observation. It always amazes me, number one, that people do go around abusing children. I mean, that's awful. But also this idea that do you really think you're so untouchable you're going to get away with this crap? But
of course, you allow yourself to be photographed doing that?
Yeah, maybe there were covert photographs taken. I don't know.
Oh, but, maybe, yeah.
Maybe that's what it was. I don't know. And maybe that's another reason. Maybe this one or more of these boxes contained some Soviet blackmail material. Soviet agents had actually managed to get compromising photos of various people in the government. And so,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, or if you wanted to work on the theory that Michael X was in possession of these materials, maybe he had both. Maybe he was not trying to blackmail the royal family. Maybe he was trying to sell them to the Soviets.
Yeah, could be. Well, you know, unfortunately, one of us needs to get a job with MI5 or MI6.
Yeah, I'm available.
And just get access to those files, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's one last theory, it's the all the above theory. It just occurred to me while I was writing this script out that there's no reason why all these things can't be true at the same time. Like literally every one of these theories could have happened without necessarily being in conflict with the others. Like they could have been dumb criminals. They could have been recovering documents for the royal family. They could have found gross pictures of the prime minister, or not the prime minister, but the conservative cabinet members. They could have paid off the cops. Like all these things could be true.
Yeah. Absolutely, or none of them. But
none of them. Yeah,
yeah. Well, at least one of these things is probably true. Yeah. So an interesting little mystery, and of course, you know, I think that some of the guys that were involved with this are still alive. In fact, I recall reading an article about one of them a while back, just a couple of years ago, and you know, he's retired to someplace in the Caribbean, sort of, you know, just leading the life of Riley, because of course, you know, he's probably got some money still squirreled away from this heist.
Yep.
So, you know,
well,
fund a nice retirement.
Well, and that's, we're going to pick up the story next week, because as we have teased before, this is still going on. That the story of this heist, it does not end in the 70s. It does not end with the release of the Jason Statham movie.
Yeah.
It keeps going up basically until today. So we're going to pick this one up next week with the thrilling conclusion and a brand new heist to add to this heist.
Ooh, heisty. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, so, but until then, I guess we're going to have to like sign off here. So, of course, the usual caveats, stick around so you can hear important information about our email and our social media accounts. And, of course, a quick plea to, if you haven't already, leave us a rating and a review.
Yeah, it really helps us to keep going, to get new listeners, to keep expanding our listenership. We really appreciate when people do that for us.
Oh, yeah, please do that. Till next time, and the story will be continued here in a few days. So, ciao.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Did I get his name right? George.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.